everyone. This is Matt, and welcome to our podcast series, Takeout, with Ashley Coff RD and Robin O'Brien, discussing better nutrition simplified in the new food economy.
Today we have special guest Laurie Corbin joining the show, who is a nutrition and fitness reporter for ABC7 Eyewitness News. Some of the topics to be discussed today are: how have trends changed? Who should parents believe in the health world? Should we step away from the product world? How can the media help? And maybe most importantly, why are consumers so confused? Right, I sense a thought-provoking show coming up, so over to you, ladies.
Hey, Robin, I'm excited to be back. I'm back, listen to me. Excited to be back, especially because we just came from Expo East, where we saw all these new natural products launching and the press and the media coverage. Everybody like hoping for 10 seconds to get you to talk about their product or to, woo you into saying something, either, you know, take a shot of it now for social media, et cetera. And it always has my head spinning a bit. I mean, literally my first moment walking into Expo East, which is, you know, in Baltimore, there are thousands of new products. And I walk into the press room and I was going over to literally just get some water. And somebody was like, oh, don't have water, have this instead. And they handed me a product, a bottle, that at first I was like, oh, it doesn't feel like it's plastic. So, okay, maybe this is going to be a glass, you know, or some sort of metal bottle of water. And I turned it over and it was banana water. And I'm not going to say here what I said there, like just the profanity that went through my brain. And that was my morning arrival to Expo East. And the problem with it was, first of all, it's called banana water. Last I checked, there is actually no water in a banana, or maybe there's small amounts. I shouldn't say there's no water. But second, you know, I flipped it over and there were all of these pieces and parts. There was banana flavor, you know, puree, added potassium, magnesium, like all these things, just so unbelievably ridiculous. And, you know, that definitely started me on one of the trend stories of Expo for me that from a coverage standpoint was, you know, since when is just regular water not good enough, but also why are we creating things and promoting things that have absolutely no reason to exist, right?
So I know.
The media
and
piece,
I think,
yeah.
I think too, you know, I felt the same way. You can understand why the consumer at this point is so confused. And so you've got all these, you know, new products coming in and all this information that's coming in, and how can they step back and say, okay, what do I actually need and what makes sense? And I think, unfortunately, right now, you know, one of the CEOs said there's sort of a gold rush in the food industry, you know, with all these entrepreneurs that are coming in, and some of them are great and super passionate, and others, are really seeing the opportunity in the food industry and the buyouts and the acquisitions that are happening. And I think it's important, you know, for people to understand what is it that they really need to know, and, you know, how is this product actually going to make things better? You know, does it actually make things better? So that's why I'm just so thrilled about today's guest that we have Laurie on.
Yeah, and I think it's fascinating. I mean, one of the things I'm most excited to talk about is somebody who's been, and when we get into this, who's been in the industry for a long, or has been covering the industry and not even covering it as an industry for a long period of time, because I think what we're seeing is it used to be that we would discover these products or ingredients, like someone like myself, a healthcare practitioner, would get excited about what's something that can help somebody heal, but then it's like there's this arc or there's this after a couple of years of it becomes trendy, and then as soon as it becomes trendy, like it gets overdone. So anyway, there's no person better to talk to about this. We've got Laurie Corbin on the phone. She is ABC7 from Los Angeles, their food coach. I will ask her to confirm this, but I believe you are the only on-staff member of any network television that is specifically devoted, at least historically, to covering food and nutrition and fitness. And Laurie, we're just so thrilled to have you here. Full disclosure, one of my closest friends, but that's really come from years and years of going through all of this together and needing an ally to turn around and say, like, how can we actually cover something in the media in a way that helps people or highlights the things that are just the ridiculous to hopefully help them, you know what to avoid. So, Laurie, we're thrilled to have you here from, I think you're at home in Malibu in California, yeah?
I am, and thanks, you guys. It's very nice to talk to you guys, especially about a topic that all of us are very passionate about. And as as people who, I mean, we all have to eat, right? But as people that make it more of their mission in a good way, I think in a healthy, positive way, and also with a sense of humor, it has been a very interesting journey of starting in news, you know, back in, you know, I hate to date myself, but, you know, around 94. And at the time, I think it was all fat-free revolution, and we were looking at Greenfield's brownies and everything fat-free, and then rolling into busting sugar, and then we had to eat pork rinds and the Atkins world, and just watching these trends. And as a person that was in journalism and still is, it's very difficult because there's this sort of perception in the newsroom to cover something because it's popular, but you also want to make sure you have the you know, the pros and the cons of some of these things that are happening. And so I think we're doing better with that message nowadays, but on the other hand, there's so much massive information for consumers, and so I think it's wonderful to be able to attend, as you were talking about, these food expos, and you have the hope and the dream that you're going to walk into these massive showrooms and find some fabulous innovation. And you do, but at the same time, you find banana water and things that, you know, again, are going to totally confuse a consumer, that they should pay for that and instead of having perhaps the real deal. So I find, you know, in a sense, our work will probably never be done. And it's sort of, it's interesting to watch how it all plays out. And I'm sure as our challenges change in America and actually globally, the products will change as well. But for now, we have a certain amount of wealth, a certain amount of health, and we're trying to supposedly make people healthier with these products that can really be ridiculous, you know, just very crazy. And it's very hard to fight that whole message when I think sometimes often the people with the biggest products have the biggest ad budget. And
well,
Ashley,
and
I'm assuming...
I think that's like such a valid point, right? So like, of course, mea culpa, I started my career off in advertising. I mean, we love those ad budgets, you know, we love to, like, we will tell you exactly what you need to know, and we have enough money to, you know, shout it louder.
I think sometimes, and this probably might not be, well, I don't know how fair we can say it is. I'm supposed to be fair. I'm supposed to, if someone brings me a product to do a review on, or maybe a topic, let's just say juicing, for example, you know, I have my own personal thoughts and my thoughts, you know, what I feel is a good health background on what I feel like a viewer should know. And it hopefully isn't just my personal thought, but more what can you glean from this story so that when you see juice or you decide you want to even do a cleanse, that you have at least three bullet points of information that will tell you what is a good idea and what you might want to watch out for. So I think that's hard in today's, I guess you're going to say, arena, where you've got companies that, you know, like avocados have their own PR board, you know what I mean? But that's a good thing. But on the other hand, you have these products coming to you instead of maybe a health expert coming to you saying, hey, I would like to talk to you about juicing. We generally have maybe organizations that have juices themselves trying to sell me on something that would be a good idea for people to see. So knowing that I have a health background, it's great because I can say, all right, I'm willing to entertain this. I see it. I'm seeing more and more of it, so I understand it's popular, it's trending. I need then to make sure viewers understand how this goes. Then you just really have to make sure you have experts that actually are experts, someone like yourself, Ashley, obviously Robin, someone like yourself, where it isn't what I think, it's what you think, and maybe what someone else thinks. So it's not just one person who owns a company or one person who's a spokesperson for a company, but people that are outside that are not being paid by that company to come in and tell us things that we want to know about these particular products or, you know, programs that are happening, of which there are many.
And what do you think, I mean, obviously being in LA, you're at the, you know, the heart of so many of these trends. Like a lot of times when I'm giving my, you know, talks around the country, I'll say, you know, I feel badly because, you know, if you open up one of these popular magazines, you might think that like in order to be healthy, you have to drink activated charcoal every day, right? Or you have to do a juice cleanse. Or I remember even when you like, people felt like they had to eat sushi in order to be healthy. And now people are like, oh God, I would never touch sushi. I don't eat fish. But you know, in terms of the, you know, sort of being in the trend capital, and I think one of the interesting things that Robin and I often talk about is that, you know, some of the stuff that she's encountering a lot with her community, you know, a lot of people don't believe parents when they say, you know, my child has this allergy or this intolerance, because in some ways it sounds like it's so trendy, right? Like, Robin, you, I know we've talked a little bit about, you have some, that can seem challenging that somebody dismisses food choices based on a, it being a trend, but you're trying to actually navigate it as a parent and not be one of those like weird people that's trying to be difficult or, you know, do something
well,
that's on
I
trend.
Well, I know, and I think, you know, again, you know, we've hit this new stage where diet is no longer one size fits all. And if you think back like 20 years ago to Thanksgiving or something like that, you know, we all probably sat around the similar meal at that table, no matter where we were around the country. And today that's just not the case, not with the rates of diabetes and food allergies and all these other conditions that we're dealing with. And so that change can be really uncomfortable for some people. And so again, you know, how do we navigate that change and how do we give people permission to have that grace and flexibility? And again, I think it's where Lori's work is so important, because you have to have really credible, balanced voices, because there is so much noise. And, you know, with that noise, you know, is that fear and that doubt and that confusion. And, you know, advertisers are great at that, you know, create this insecurity so that somebody has to buy your product. And again, how do we get through that noise as consumers? And also really honor and recognize that today it is no longer one size fits all.
Yeah, you know, go ahead.
I was just going to say, with that negativity of the food allergy probably came the positivity of these food manufacturers trying to reinvent the wheel on all of these different allergies or allergens. So the nice thing about that was, yes, we got good products, and of course then after that we got the inundation and maybe some not so great products. But now when people go to Thanksgiving, there's that question, you know, is anyone allergic to something? I mean, it really has change. People laugh like, oh, Lori, in the old days, I ate tofurkey. Sorry, I liked it. You know, I really wanted to go and feel like I was a part of the dinner. So I would bring that with me. Or I, you know, nowadays people will often bring their gluten-free specialty or some sort of newscast we'll do every year on what can you bring for the vegan or the gluten intolerant or the, you know, whatever to your table. It's right up there with, you know, turkey leftovers, that we do that every year. So in a way that's, you know, something that's not fun, something that makes people feel bad, has become kind of status quo and okay. You know, there are a lot of people with these allergies. I mean, a lot of schools don't have, as you all know, not only peanut butter, but nut butters, just no nuts.
Nuts in general. I know, I always feel so bad, like whenever I'm doing anything back to school, it's like you have to take out one of my favorite, you know, categories, you know, just when you're eliminating nuts. Somebody was just telling me, actually, it was really funny, I think it epitomizes this, there's an app out now called Special Guest, and you can ask your guests when they are coming to fill out the you know, their special guest profile, so you can actually read it ahead of time so that you don't have to like call or, you know, and so like I could have a profile in there. And, you know, there's just, maybe it's just something unfortunately in the name or whatever, but of course it proceeded to be like, you know, just devolved into total laughter about, you know, I was joking, I'm like, well, if my mom came as a special guest, it would have to be like, or even me, I'm like, I would want to be eat, is it okay on my special guest profile? I prefer to eat by at 5 and be done by 7:30. You know, it's like, I prefer to make sure, you know, I mean, it is kind of, I think to Robin's point, it's like, it's not even so much about your allergy or your intolerance. It's really just that we all are eating today in a way that we've, you know, decided hopefully is really what works for us as individuals. And so how do you not make that isolationist, you know, and just be Switzerland a little bit more, I guess, in the eating process. But it does
well,
seem
yeah,
like a
and
funny
do you,
one.
Also, though, that we, if we went to, as we, our mantra is eat real food, eat whole food, you know, that means stepping away from that product world, you know, and I think that's hard for people because we've even talked about this with lower income groups, Ash, is that, you know, it's tough for people to say, yeah, I've been working all day, I'd take 3 cat buses to get home, I'm going to, you know, cook that pot of beans because it was only $1.20, you know, or whatever. But, you know, having said that, I think one of the biggest messages that we have that will stay probably true throughout our time is the more we stay closer to what comes out of the ground without pesticides.
Yeah. So I was going to jump right into that. And I thought, like, there would be nothing better right now than to talk about how could, so we were all involved with Prop 37, the, you know, trying to get GMO labeling in Los Angeles, and involved in different ways. I was, you know, definitely advocating for it. Robin, certainly, and involved with Just Label It. And Lori, you know, you saw it firsthand in terms of coverage, what was covered, what wasn't covered. But, you know, to me, it really became a marketing, and the media, I felt, was really actually used a bit in the marketing, right? I mean, it came out later that, you know, there was coverage of a guy from who said he went to Stanford, and it turned out he didn't. He was, like, standing on Stanford's campus, but his organization was actually owned by Monsanto, et cetera. And without devolving into all of this, I thought a fun exercise could actually be, you know, I will be very clear about my positioning as a healthcare practitioner. I don't think that we can say all GMOs are bad, evil, the biggest health problem even in the country. I just would like to know so that, you know, I think we've got probably too much of them. And since we don't have enough long-term evidence of what they do or don't do, I'd rather be able to avoid or lessen, you know, my intake, right? So I'm pro-labeling. But I would love to look at, like, how could, as we move forward, how could the media be involved in covering this in a non-marketing way? And or on the flip side, how could companies be better at getting their message out in the media in a way that doesn't feel like a marketing way?
Right. Well, you know, I looked at Robin's website when you said we were all going to get together and have this chat. And the one thing that caught my eye, Robin, was the kids that ate organic for the week, and they did the testing of their urine. Mm-hmm. And that spoke a lot in the sense of what was in this child was coming out of this child, obviously, from 1 week to another week, or maybe it was a 2 week, I think, that they did that. It didn't necessarily speak to what that did to the child, which, of course, is unfortunate, but it still scares parents. Yeah, because they want their kids to be healthy, and they think they're doing the best they can. So, you know, I've gone around with this, and I think it's the hardest message because we don't have black and white data. We have to have something that is just so concrete. I mean, all of us say we want to know, and it's certainly great to know. And coming from this message, whether we get this label on the packages or not, you've reached such an awareness so that now people, almost without thinking, in a span of saying it has no sugar, it has high in fiber, and it's no GMO. So for them just to say that, whether it's a popularity thing in a good way, and you would just hope with that message we're going to get more and more products, that it's not a fad, that it's not an end.
But we get then that people think no GMO means that it's healthy now. Like, now I'm on the opposite side, right? I have people who are saying to me, oh, I ate that. It's kind of like the fat-free cookies you were talking about. They're like, oh, but the cookies I had were non-GMO. I'm like, right, that has nothing to do with calories. Like, it has nothing to do, you know, and you sit there and it's like, I mean, to me, the one thing I think of, the missing story is, there's no way that a soybean that is just a regular soybean versus a soybean seed that has had its genes manipulated at the DNA level can be called the same thing. So shouldn't those two things just have to be called different, you know, be called different things? And I think, like, at the core, that seems like an interesting message to me, you know, but I agree with you. I mean, it's like it's become this whole, like, it's a marketing piece.
Well,
right.
You know, and I think, you know, Lori's point is we don't have all of the information yet. You know, these products, a lot of these products are new. We don't know what they do in combination with other products, you know. And one of the questions that I asked early on in the work was when I took my child into the allergist's office and I said, you know, when you're testing her for soy, are you testing her for the soy that's been in our food supply for hundreds of years? Are you testing her for Roundup Ready soy? Are you testing her for non-GMO soy that's been treated? And I just got that deer in the headlights look, you know.
Right.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
At that point, I realized, wow, we don't have that level of testing. And again, until we can at least have that level of testing, we can't even begin to collect this data. So again,
right.
It speaks to, you know, let's have full transparency. I mean, we're told allergen content, we're told protein, we're told fat, we're told sugar. You know, let's put this on the label. So that, you know, again, I come from this conservative Texas family. It's so that people can take personal responsibility for their own health. And I think, you know, that's what it comes down to. And I think maybe why this issue is so sensitive is because it sort of flies in the face of everything that we believe about our country. It's like, wait, that there's no way that would happen here, you know?
Yes, and yes.
And yet it has. And so it challenges more than just how you feed your family. It challenges the belief system. And I think that's why it can be such a charged issue.
Yeah, and I think, Lori, I'd love your thought. I think personal responsibility. So not only have you had this whole background in news, but you've also been somebody who has worked with individuals on the fitness side and on the, you know, making their food and all of these pieces. You know, how do we create? I mean, to me, that's the solution to better health. It's like, it's not telling people what to do and then also doing it for them, even though, you know, I made quite a good career of that in Los Angeles. It's like, you, there are places where people really are just happy to pay you to do it for them. But, like, you know, when we look at the whole country, it's, so how do we, and is there a role for the media? Is there a role for, you know, companies? How do we, what do you see as like a way to create personal responsibility successfully?
Yeah, that's, I think the accountability, you know, it's, that is so tough because I think it's a personality driven thing. I mean, we can see people on any given day that just went to the store and bought like Shape magazine or downloaded an app and got a Fitbit and said, yeah, I just stopped eating so much and yeah, I included a salad every meal and suddenly they lost a lot of weight. And then because they lost weight, they went to the gym more because they went to the gym more, they looked better. And then they felt better. And then, you know, they had an article in Shape magazine themselves. You know, I think those things happen. I think the hardest part is the mentality we have, which, you know, I'll get on my soapbox from my father, you know, that we, you know, Robin, like you, I came from a very conservative family where, you know, more Midwestern type of you do everything yourself if you can. That's how it's
right. Been.
You know, you don't lean on people, and if, you know, you're out of luck, then you just work harder, you know, and that doesn't mean it always works for you, but you realize that life isn't fair. So that being our, you know, raised, you know, mantra, I think it's difficult because I have not been raised in today's life where these many of our people have been raised to say, well, if something hurts, there's a pill for that or there's a shot for that or, you know, whatever. It's not the, well, what you need to do is go outside, you know, and do something else, you know. So I think it is a very tough question. I just think we do need more people. Thank goodness that food and fitness are probably in the top 10 of the most commonly emailed articles. If you look at the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, it is pretty topical, and people do enjoy those things. So that means a common reader is looking at that. And so that's good news, I think, for people like us that are trying to get something out that gives you the, you know, the message. I just feel like along with all of us, there's equally those people that'll say, hey, you know, just drink these or take that and you're going to be better, you know. So if we can get away from the, you know, the pill popping and the powders and packages and actually go to the real deal, that means fitness included, then that's great. And
you don't want to pop a wine pill?
Right.
Well, you know, and I mean, as a mom of four, one of the things that I kind of had to tell myself early on in motherhood was, if it's a habit that I can form, that I can keep every day, like brushing my teeth, you know, then that's a good thing. And so I moved through it like that, you know, instead of this like short-term quick fix mentality that, you know, quite honestly, we were all raised on with Diet Cokes and rice cakes and fat-free snack wells and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's like, what can I actually integrate into my life that is something that I can do every single day, you know? And I think we're not so great at that, I don't think, as a society. And again, to sort of say, wow, maybe that's how we thought back in the 20th century, but for 21st century families, what's actually going to work for us now that we know all of this and we've got just massive amounts of data and information coming at us every single day through our phones and through our computer screens. And I think, again, it gets back to this one-size-fits-all thing. And I think that whole shift from sort of this 20th century food system to what we are moving into today, again, we're still in the pretty early stages of that.
Yeah, I think that's also an amazing lead-in because, Lori, one of the reasons that you were selected is not just because of what you do every day from a work standpoint, but really, you know, we want to talk to you because of how you're doing it and how, you know, one of the things that we're really driven from this podcast to do is to talk to people that we think are excellent examples of we'll say walking the talk. Sometimes you're jumping and lifting and doing other parts of the talk, but at minimum walking the talk, and being able to, you know, really glean information so that, you know, our hope is that through all of the different experts that we talk to and the different people that are interviewed, somebody finds and hears from someone that helps them have that moment, you know, that aha, this would work for me. So we do have some questions. I'm going to let Robin get started, but we have some questions that we ask on every podcast, so we'll jump into those.
Yeah, okay. And with some of these, you know, it's up to you if you want to do it personally or professionally, but the first one is, you know, in this work of yours, what's the greatest obstacle you've overcome?
You know, I think the only thing that I was trying to think about it, because I don't find, I found I've been very blessed with how this all seemed to, I seem to walk into it, which is really cool and probably makes everyone else really mad. But I think the thing is that when people looked at me at that time in life, which was again around 94 when I was going into this, that it was all a bit of fun. It was a little bit of flash and just something like picking up Family Circle magazine in a doctor's office, that we're just looking at the best salad recipe or, you know, how to make iced tea fun. They didn't look at it as serious science or something that I was really bringing to the table that was more of a real serious topic. But in fact, you know, there were a lot of things that I felt were really important for people to know. And it's nice to be able to say, all right, I'm going to take a positive angle towards it, more of a happy news you can use kind of thing. So that was the hardest thing because, you know, throughout history, I mean, between the 90s and up to date, we've had, you know, we've had war, we've had hurricane, we've had all these different things, and you're still sort of in the newsroom as this person that's talking about nutrition and fitness. So, mm-hmm. you know, during those times, it's a little rough to be this reporter. But on the other hand, you know, most of the time you're trying to say, yeah, I want food to be fun. I want people to enjoy it, but I also want them to get this stuff that's serious. So I think it was difficult for them, in my opinion, for them to take this topic seriously. And, you know, we don't need to see food every day, Lori. You know, oh, we think that's a little too light, even though partially hydrogenated oil was, you know, kind of serious at the time. So, you know, there's all those different things that I thought were kind of hard to push to the front as I didn't want to necessarily do what Congress said today or what, you know, some FDA spokesperson said. I really actually did want to do what was trending, but make that something that people could understand how it would affect them, whether it was a good or a bad thing or, you know, just fun and go ahead and give it a shot. So I think that was the hardest part of this genre that I have.
Yeah, because you really see the greater vision in it for sure, which I think too, like, leads to this next question. And it's something I say all the time, like, I don't really want to spend a whole lot of time looking back and blaming or, you know, wagging a finger at anybody. You know, in front of us, we have this landscape that is wide open, you know, with just so much opportunity and so many ways that people can engage. And what's the biggest opportunity that you see in this movement?
Well, you know, we've got all these really good people putting out products. I know Ashley knows, and you probably know them well, the hemp protein people, you know, Manitoba Harvest type, that put out a product that don't do it with a lot of flash. So you'd say, man, I wish the message would be, you know, you guys that are in the food industry, there is so much good food you could actually put out and still do fabulous marketing and still deliver a really good product instead of doing, in a sense, what you're doing. I think that's one space. The other thing is, and probably the most important, is we have an arguing Congress over how we're going to feed our children, and that's huge. I mean, obviously, we're still arguing about it. It's a food fight that goes on forever and ever, and this administration obviously took it on, and now there's a backlash, and now we're going to, you know, I guess Congress will vote again sometime soon about whether we can make allowances and how we're going to handle this. And it boggles my mind that we have such great food innovators. People love the Food Channel. We have all these wonderful chefs and dietitians and all this, and we can't put together a nutrition act that works, that's simple. It's got to be far more simple than this. But yet I think we struggle, and I think we struggle obviously because a lot of it is political, which is heartbreaking because the person who pays ultimately is the child. And if there was one thing we could really get right, it would be this: whether you have a high income family or a low income family, we can feed you, and we can do that right. And if we can do that right, at least you have that part right, so that you can study and, you know, become somebody great. That part, I think, is the worst.
That's a great opportunity, and it's a critical one, too. So who inspires you?
You know, that was a good question. I laugh at the things that make me inspired because I'm much like a modern, typical American, that I look at some of the front runners in our industry, and this is not that they were the almighty perfect, but when you look at the chains that started us eating well, I look first to the Veggie Grill, which still fries its food, but it was a plant-based restaurant chain. They got people that to willing to go over from that maybe not such a great burger to something that was plant, a tempeh salad, or, you know, chicken with a K or whatever. And hopefully they've got that good product. But from the Veggie Grill went True Food and then went Life Kitchen. So you're looking at these chains where you see normal people and they're willing to go in there and have macaroni and cheese the right way or something super in a kale or whatever. So you're seeing this sort of layman's healthy food, and it's popular. It's not just, you know, freaky, weird vegetarians going there. And I think that's great. Right along those lines, I think guys like Dr. Oz, I mean, his first book with Roizen on You, the Owner's Manual, was brilliant in its comic book type form on, you know, what, here's your gallbladder. I mean, all the different things that people don't understand about their body, they made simple. And then, of course, that rolled into his show, which, yes, he's had his high and lows, but that man makes science simple. And that's what the normal human being needs to know. And I think it's a very popular concept, and I admire that because he makes it sound interesting, and he brings fabulous people to his show. Right, Ashley?
And Robin and all of us. Yeah, exactly. No, I agree with you. I mean, Robin always says, don't let perfect be the enemy of the good. And I think that's, you know, we've gotten to this place where, what, do we want to have no education because it wouldn't be perfect education? As if there was such a thing in science or health, you know. So I agree. I think it's, you know, the fact that we've brought better. And, you know, if doctors or other people want to have a, you know, a wrath around the fact that he's, including my father, who was, you know, just blown away by the way that he showed something related to the kidneys. And I said, Dad, you have to understand, this is like really what edutainment, like we're educating through entertainment. And he's like, yeah, but you know, we shouldn't have to do that. We shouldn't. I totally agree with him. We should be able to, you know, sit down and have conversations one-on-one for 3 hours, but whose insurance is paying for that, you know? So, your trajectory of how you looked at people who inspire you really makes a lot of sense ending up there.
Yeah, we need the happy people. You know, we need a positive thing. We don't want people to be depressed because they're overweight and have a heart problem, or, you know, BMI's too great or whatever. I mean, it's just the gloom and doom club. So if he can get those people crying, laughing, hugging, standing up and taking a 1 minute jump break, you know, yay, I'm happy for that.
Sure. Okay, so I think I can skip over this next question.
Yeah.
And I'll answer it and see if you would agree. What message would you send to Congress? And I feel the same way. Food should not be a political football. It should not be a political football. So if you were a food, what would you be?
Yeah, I was going to say chocolate chip cookie, but that would be all wrong, right?
No, it's the best. Why? Why would you be a chocolate chip cookie?
I'd be, of course, a good chocolate chip cookie.
Yes.
Well, you know, it is probably one of the most satisfying foods. It's, you know, of course, got that great dark chocolate, you know, so you got your good, you do have a little plant chemical going on there, you know, but then you've got your healthy carb, I'm assuming, depending on the way you made it, you've got your good butter. It's very satisfying, good mouthfeel, not totally a well-balanced food, but it is when I don't feel good, and I could have anything, you know, wrong. For some reason, I think, God, I would just kill for, you know, one of those flat chocolate chip cookies that are thin and then kind of crunchy on the outside, chewy in the middle. That's what I would go for every time.
I love it. And you know what I love is that I just walked down 3 aisles at Expo where it was actually all like cookies or bars, or now, you know, people are doing like making them into bites or like bark or any of this stuff. And I, you know, people are like, oh, as a dietitian, I'm sure you just, you know, roll your eyes at this. I'm like, no, what I roll my eyes at is that none of this tastes good. Like, to me, it's the whole thing of, like, what I love that you said about a chocolate chip cookie was the first piece, which is it's just so satisfying. And the saddest part to me, and what I try to talk to my clients about all the time, is I want you to have it if it's satisfying. The problem is that if you have something that's not satisfying, we just keep eating until we find something that is, right? It's like, that's where, I mean, I remember praying that I would love the taste of a snack called chocolate chip cookie because it was fat-free, and I was like, I don't like the taste of it. So no wonder I could eat 30 of them, because you just, you know, by about the 30th, you're just bored. You know, you've gone like, but you just haven't been satisfied yet. So I think that's such an important point.
And it's such an awful message, because people, that's where I feel sad. I'm working with some people right now, and they love to tell you what they do know about nutrition. I'm going to have this soup, and I know that'll fill me up, and I know these veggies. And I go, yeah, but you could put something in that, you know.
Yeah.
Would you put a little olive oil in that? And, you know, there's this just dry mouth. You're like, yeah, you know, fat is your friend, you know. And
yeah. Or I love melted cheese. Like, I'm the first to say, like, why not? You know, where, how did we get to the place where it's not okay to have, you know, people are like, oh, I boiled my vegetables in water and then had it with that, you know, like chicken breast without the skin. And I was like, wow, like, your meal sounds absolutely awful. I don't care how good quality the chicken or the broccoli is, you know, so I think that's so key.
If you think about people going to a baseball game and they'll get that scary cardboard thing that has chips on it and something that resembles cheese but isn't, and it's, you know, of course piled high, and they'll scarf down the whole thing, you know, along with an 80-ounce beer and, you know, what God knows, whatever. But then conversely, you could go to Europe and you could sit down to a plate of stinky cheeses and a crusty bread and, a bottle of wine, and chances are you didn't lick that cheese plate. You probably, I know I didn't, but, you know, I mean, in other words, the cheeses are so good, so flavorful, so full of all kinds of flavor palette with good texture and taste that you didn't need it. You know, you really sat and thought about what you wanted. And that would be, you know, if we could, gosh, convince people to actually sit and savor and really enjoy just those things that they truly love in the obviously a modest portion, I think they would be so much more successful than they are now.
I totally agree. And then we have this last question, and I'm thinking, why do we have this last question? It's 2050, how did this story play out? And I think we know how it's going to play out. We're going to fix this. We have to. You know, the health of our country and the health of our families are in a position where we have no other way but forward to fixing this. So we are so grateful that you were so ahead of your time, Lori. Just listening to you talk about, you know, what you were striving to achieve back in the 90s before people were really realizing what an important issue this was. It takes people like you and all of us doing that every step of the way. So I personally just want to say thank you so much for your commitment to this over a lifetime.
Well, thank you, Robin, to e-meet, or not e-meet you, I guess phone meet you. You guys, it sounds like a fun project that you're doing, and I'm happy to be a part of it. So I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, thank you so much. And we look forward to more stories and certainly some more trends that we can either laugh about or get excited about. Hopefully more on the latter.
See you all at Expo 2015.
That's 2016. Oh, my goodness. Yes. Great. Thank you.
All right. Bye, guys.
Take
Thanks.
Care. Bye.
Thank you for that, ladies. A big thank you to Lori Corbin. Be sure to follow her on Twitter at ABC7Lori. Now on to our next show. Leah Segedi will be joining the podcast. Leah is a food activist with over 10,000 bloggers to help with her quest to create food awareness around the country. Leah was named Mum of the Year by Shape magazine and has her work featured on CNN, NBC, and The O'Reilly Factor. It's going to be a great show. Until then, see you next time.